female. Well, it wasn't just one. She brought her friend, Tina, too. So I have no cultural legacy. I have no legacy. Thus, my financial legacy is destroyed so that you could have a roll in the hay with two non-black females. Pretty much. To you brothers and sisters from around the world,
it can't be. No medium.
I submit to you, brothers and sisters from around the world, that we must allow the Catholic Church off the hook. If we don't condemn what's happening here, we have to allow the Catholic Church off the hook. If we don't condemn this. We would have to allow them. We would have to allow the pedophile priests, and I'm saying it just like that. If we are allowing this to happen and we say nothing, then you've got to release a lot more people out there. You will have to release a lot more people and let a lot more people off the hook if you let this go on. I'm in the midst of editing for 7 a.m., the groundbreaking documentary that is going to start the process of dealing with how this kind of thing occurred. If you are not familiar with it, if you haven't heard from it, if you're one of the few people who's been living under a rock for the last 2 months, go to our website, 7ammovie.com. That's 7ammovie.com. The number 7ammovie.com. In the middle of the screen, you'll see where it says click here to get involved, and you can join us in helping to promote the most important documentary of all time, because it deals with the fact that you have lost your legacy. It deals with that. Because as young black people, you've been told that selling your souls was the thing to do, and I'm here to tell you that it's not. I'm here to tell you that it's not. Now, your elders are not going to tell you this because they spent their lives trying to figure out how they could make it happen for themselves. They're trying to figure out how they could sell themselves out, and you were just a bargaining chip with which to do that. You were just a bargaining chip with which they could enrich themselves. For many of you, I'm the first person who ever sat down and actually told you the truth about this, but it's time that somebody did. Because you have watched as you have been totally and completely removed. You have been completely removed. And once they finish removing you, once they finish erasing you from the public eye, then it's only going to be a matter of time before once you're out of sight in the media, nobody's going to miss you if you go out of sight in real life. Nobody's going to miss you if you just disappear altogether. Nobody's going to miss that. This is why these kinds of things are critically important. They're critically important because this could very well be your last chance. This could very well be your last chance to get this right. If you haven't been to 7ammovie.com, go there. Make sure that you get involved with our efforts to promote this, because nobody else is going to bring this in front of the national media. Nobody else is going to talk about this. Why? Because the national media is in favor of the white supremacist agenda. Hell, they're the propaganda wing of it. As they are concerned, the best thing that could happen to rap music is to get rid of the people who created it. As far as they're concerned, that's the best thing that could happen to it, is to eliminate the people who made it. As far as they're concerned, the only thing that is wrong with rap music is that black people are still in it. And if they can remove us from the equation, then it will be perfect. Time. Not right now. But if they can get rid of us, then it'll be perfect. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines here now. The telephone lines are open. You can call us at 646-787-1933. That's 646-787-1933. That's your access code to the blackchannel.net radio program. Call in and let your voice be heard. Of course, the sooner you call in, the longer time we give you to speak on this. Let's go ahead and take caller from 313. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah, this is Vaughn from Detroit.
What's on your mind, brother?
I agree with you in part, but I think we always have this issue where it appears we put 100% of our failures on white supremacy. And, you know, throughout our history, you know, as Dr. Claus said, for the last, 1,500 years, from other people putting us in slavery to us being placed third or fourth class citizens, we had a pretty good hand in that. And to a good part, allow others to abuse us and take advantage of us. You know, regarding this music, you know, we created the sound of America from ragtime to jazz. But for some reason, we always seem to walk away from things we create and let others take charge of it. And, you know, it's our demise is a lot to do at our own hands, and we keep doing it. You know, example, I was listening, ran down the street, and this young lady was in her car, and she was playing the most vile, nastiest rap song you can imagine, and it basically went along the lines that the female rapper was stating how she liked to feel a ball smacking against her clit, and then she was just bouncing away to this. And you know, I'm thinking, what young lady would want to play that where others can hear it, and just play it as loud with just extreme vulgarity? And, you know, and they move to those type of rappers, and, you know, to the point where it's public porn. Now, we all know porn, it does have its place, but it's not meant to be public because at a certain point in our lives, you know, we like to put certain things away in the closet, so to speak. And but for here, to make it so public now, hear it so out in the open, you know, it's just nasty. And as far as I know, we're on the people that does that. And these young folks, they do it, and they get a little older, and to a certain extent, it dawns on them after they, you know, polluted themselves morally to the point where, you know, they're just disgusting. That it dawned on them, you know what, maybe this wasn't the direction I should have went in. But by that time, you had already passed it on to the next generation and generation after that. So with the music, we all love that R&B sound from Motown, I would say, to the mid-90s. But so many of us have moved away from it and left alone. You know, something's good. It's only natural for people to come along and say, you know, this is good. If they don't want it, I'll take it. And that's seemed to be what has happened here. Some folks have come along and say, you know what, if they don't want to treat it, cultivate it, let it continue on growing, I'll take it over. And that's what happened. The same with jazz. So, you know, if others will be supreme over us, we allow it and we encourage it, and that seems to be our downfall.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's what I was explaining here tonight, is that white supremacy is doing what white supremacy is supposed to do. It is promoting itself. It is empowering itself. It is emboldening itself. It's reinforcing itself. That is what I'm talking about when I say white supremacy. White supremacy is not pulling off some great magic trick. White supremacy is doing what white supremacy does. I'm not saying that there's some magic to it. What I bring it back around to is that we are handing ourselves over to it. There are plenty of black folk who disagree with everything I'm saying tonight, right down to the idea that rap needs black people. That because we made it, they'll sit up here and will tell you outright, just because we made it does not mean that we should be its prime representatives, or that we should even be involved in it at all, that it's okay if we're not. And especially the young black folk, they've learned the lessons of interracialism and integrationism. And there's a reason why I'm saying those terms like that. They've learned the lessons, because the lessons of interracialism is that you sell your soul to get into bed with a white person. That is interracialism, that you give up everything you've got, destroy your family, destroy your neighborhood, destroy your children, destroy yourself. Everything is centered around destroying yourself if the reward is getting in bed with a white person. You are to give up everything and to give up all so that you can have that. That's the goal of it.
I agree.
So there are plenty of people who disagree, not just in part with what I said, but they disagree with the whole thing. They are not just willing, but eager to see white supremacy steamroll us. They're eager to see that, because in their minds, more white people coming around, no matter the cost, for any reason, even if it's to kill us all, is a plus.
Well, for those of us who know a little bit of history, we also know that that was the same mentality for certain Jews. You know, I consider myself a History Channel historian, and I recently discovered how there's a number of folks of Jewish descent, known Jewish descent, within the Nazi Party or the German Army, who pretty much participated in the Holocaust of their own kind. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me. I'm pretty sure there's others who feel the same way. I know I always thought that Clarence Thomas was the top of that food chain from my standpoint, he would take any decision that would be against black folks and vote right along with the supremacy folks. So they do exist along with others, and in that sense, I agree with you 100%.
Well, I mean, but he sees the world through the eyes of white supremacy. So he is a black white supremacist. He sees the world through their eyes. Now, speaking of the History Channel, if you want to see a great documentary series about World War II, and this specifically goes into what you just mentioned about Jewish people who were selling out other Jewish people and telling them that Hitler was no problem and everything else, is a series that was called The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. The first half of it is the rise of the Third Reich. The second half is the fall of the Third Reich. But if you look it up online, it's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And I really recommend that to people if they really want to get an in-depth amount of information about what you were referring to there. That's definitely what they want to get. That's definitely the kind of thing that they want to see about.
Yeah, I'm going to make an effort to find that.
Well, I'll definitely let you have the last word on that, brother.
All right, I just want to say, yesterday when I heard you talking about, what's his name, on his $3.2 billion deal, I'm glad you pointed that out, you know, because we have a issue, a clown and want to show off, and that was a prime example. Before the Eagles even drive the contract, he out there, you know, bragging about something he don't even have yet. And, you know, we as a people got to stop doing that. We got to, you know, if we're going to be professional business people, let's do so in above class, outside the hood. Because when we done, we will always be where we at right now, and that's at the bottom of the list. Hey, thanks for taking my call, brother.
Well, one moment here before you leave. That was a very good point right there, because people do need to be professional. Have you had a chance to drop by our website, 7am.com, yet?
Yes, sir, I have, and I know I got 26 days left to put my contribution to the... So
what you're saying is that you called in 2 weeks ago saying that you could not contribute because child support was just on you so much, but as soon as you got your next check, you'd come and see us. You've gotten your next check since then, and it's 2 weeks later, and you are back with the same excuse that... I'll get around to it in just a little bit. I'll be around to it in just a little bit. And you know what that's starting to sound like?
You know, brother, that is too damn scary. That you, who takes many calls over, you know, many broadcasts, and you remember who I am and what I said. You know, that is scary. But I guess it, you know, you the man for this position, what you doing. I'm going to sit here right now before I get off this air talking to you. I'm going to make my contribution because I've been bullshitting around. You know, I've been saying I'm going to get around to it. You know, I'm working on black people's time, so, you know, forgive me. But I'm going to sit here right now and put my credit card number in and make it happen because for you to remember that. And many people you have discussions with and talk to, I'm pretty sure on and off air, is saying that I need to quit horse playing and do the do. So I'm about to do the do as we speak. And I appreciate you pointing that out to me because, like we all do, I have a tendency of BSing, as my ex-wife used to tell me.
Well... Like I say, I just thought I'd give you a reminder now. I'm not going to pressure you to do anything. The only reason that I even mention it is as a lesson to everyone else. Because here's the thing that black people and black men have to understand in general. That words mean things. And when we say something, we should mean it. And if we don't actually mean what we're saying, we shouldn't say it. Black men have a horrible, horrendous habit, as I explained during last night's broadcast. They have a horrendous habit of being the world's big bull jive artists. And they go around trying to talk their way through every situation that they get into. And that's why black men tend to be so verbose, is because they treat talking like picking a lock And if I just keep pushing it and keep turning it, eventually I'll get the response that I'm looking for. So that's the reason that black men are so good at going on and on and on and on. And then they come to a place like this where I don't really do that. I don't just sit up and talk about things and just keep talking to, for the purposes of entertaining people. If that was what I was doing, I would spend most of my time, you know, trying to shake people down and demanding money and offering subscriptions and all that stuff. I don't do any of that. I don't do that. I just get here, as much as Ustream's website will let me, I just get here and I do my thing. But at the same time, brother, for black men in particular, I want folk to understand that what Dre did was a bad look, filled every expectation about black men, even at the highest levels that you can get, as high as he is, as high in the income strata as he is, and still be acting like a ghetto buffoon. That we have a terrible habit of showing that we have allegiance to all the things that are not going to do anything for us. So that was the reason why I brought this up here. Now, what you do is totally onto you. I just wanted to let you know that I did remember that I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago. And yes, I remember you in particular. I am the authority, so I do remember those kind of things. But in the meantime, like I say, I try to choose every day as my opportunity to be an example to people in some way. I can be a good one. I can be a bad one. I try to make the good times outnumber the bad, even though I know both are going to occur. I brought this up because I wanted to remind other people that every day is our opportunity to choose what we're going to be.
Absolutely, and we cannot continue on being where we yet as a people or expect others to come help us when we don't help ourselves. So I'm hoping that message resonates before it's too late. I mean, Dr. Carl Anderson said, you know, 2013, we can hang it up. And for a section of us, I believe he's absolutely right. There's a section of us that if they're done. They ain't going nowhere. They're their prison pipeline fast track. And we can't help everybody. And it's like a sinking ship. Only so many people can get in the lifeboat. We can't save everybody. So all we can do is save those who we can and rebuild from there. And, I'm seeing a little light in that because I see in Detroit a number of small black-owned businesses open up, clothing stores. Now, the downside of that, they got these clothing stores, but they advertise here. Oh, that's what they advertise, but I guess that's what's selling. I don't know what's inside the store, but I know when you pass a number of these recently opened black-owned clothing stores, they got in the windows, the mannequins, with dancer wear. So maybe that's just to bring them in. They have something you can wear to church inside. But I don't know. It's a start, I guess. So hopefully it grows and we can see, you know, more people with fencing companies, plumbing companies, electrical companies, you know, small businesses. Because I don't know if it's possible at this point to open a store. You know, for a long time, Detroit was blackballed by large corporations. Well, I mean, like big box stores. Well, big box stores are moving in. They're selective, but they're moving in. We got a Home Depot. We got two Home Depots inside the borders of the city of Detroit. Before, they wouldn't even consider coming out here. We have a store that's similar to Sam Club. It's a local store called Myers. They're building these big box stores within the borders of Detroit. So, you know, when they start moving in, oh, and the Family Dollars and Dollar General and all of them, I moved in inside the city. Before, just let's say 5 years ago, that wasn't, as far as I know, on their radar. But now that they're moving in, I notice the Arabic stores that were dollar stores are closing up because they're, you know, these box stores or chain stores are sucking all the customers into those stores. So,
well,
you know,
think about that though. Black people need to stop being so fixated. When we say business, the first thing black folk think of is a store. We got to think beyond that, okay? Stores are nice. Stores are wonderful. But, dude, there's so much more we can be doing out there. Internet technologies, computer technologies, you know, distribution. You know, there's so much more than just having a store. Manufacturing, there's more than just having a store of some kind. And if black folk in Detroit were to treat Detroit the way that, you know, that the Indians are treating technology, you wouldn't have any problems. Right now, Detroit is the carjack city of the carjack capital of America. Why is that? Because black men are trying to figure out, how can I survive without having to touch those thingies over there? And imagine, I can practically guarantee you that every single one of them Negroes that they're arresting up there for carjacking has got a Facebook and a Twitter account.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised at that. But truthfully, Detroit's been a carjack city for the last 30 years. The whole phrase carjacking was pretty much born in Detroit back in the 80s. It has always been an issue. I think somebody just needed a storyline to put together, so they went to the old fallback. Hey, let's talk about Detroit. Detroit is on life support in this country. I mean, when I got here 22 years ago, there were 1.1 million people living within inside the borders. It was 78% black. The last census, Detroit went down to 713,000. It was 80-something percent black. Well, they just did a mid-sentencing or census check, and Detroit population dropped down to 688,000. And the tide is turning. The white population is growing, and the black population is shrinking. And the black population is not shrinking because there's no jobs. The black middle class has abandoned Detroit because they don't see no hope, because they are now have moved within the first tier rings suburbs surrounding the city. So there's people who jobs and with money, but because of the crime, it has been out of hand for pretty much 30-plus years. Ever since the crack era, the middle class, the black middle class, said, well, I had enough. They're moving out. And we shall see how that's going to work, you know, let's say 10 years from now, when that white population becomes, so right now it's like maybe 10% or so. Actually, I think it's probably higher than that. But when it becomes 40% in the next 10 to 15 years, we will see where crime is at, because I got a suspicious feeling that crime, which is always going down every year, for the last 10 years, crime has always been down, but yet still, you know, people continue moving out because of crime.
The real thing I'm looking at here is that as opportunities, you're already at 50% unemployment. I guess folks there just waiting until it gets to 100%. Thank you very much for giving us a call here tonight, and do call us again. For those of you listening over Ustream, I'm not really sure what's happening. My internet connection is still here. I mean, because I've been on Blog Talk the whole time. So I'm not sure if it's them or whatever the case might be, but I've been connected on Blog Talk just fine. So I'll see. Maybe, I don't know. I've seen this before where they were working on Ustream on Sunday. So they should be doing that at like 2 in the morning, not 7 in the evening. But that's a foreign operation. So, but we will persevere. Caller from 240, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, Jason. This is Gwendolyn from Fort Meade.
Hello, Gwendolyn from Fort Meade. What's on your mind?
You know, a couple things. First thing, quickly, I would just like to say I really appreciated what you said to the caller just before when you spoke of a man keeping his word. You know, and I remember dating my husband, and it was a short courtship because, you know, he was military, and he was, you know, getting an assignment to go somewhere. So we were dating, and I just, you know, every time he said something, he did it. And when he said he'd be there, he was there. He's 5 minutes early. And there was never a question. You know, for a long time, I even would call him and bother him, and are you sure you're going to be here on time? And because you just get into a habit of not being able to trust people's word, and I would bother him. And he told me finally, you know, when I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And he's never, ever, you know, he's never fallen short of that. And that is probably the most attractive thing that I think any man or any person, but especially any man, that's a great attribute to have, I think. And I just wanted to throw that in there. But, you know, I spent some time living in Japan, and I really think that I saw a whole different type of community and pride in people. And the Japanese were just very nice, and I've heard of different experiences in Japan, but for the most part I hear about, you know, how nice the Japanese are, and I agreed. And they just had a sense of unity and community that I don't see in even America, but definitely not in Black America. But it was more so, you know, everybody in Japan smoked, for example. A lot of Japanese people smoked, but you would never see a cigarette butt on the ground. I was in Tokyo. I was in Sendai. I was in Hachinohe, Misawa. There is never a cigarette butt on the ground anywhere in Japan. Now, of course, you go to Tokyo, you can always maybe try to find something. But there, you know, it just wasn't the same, and it wasn't a sense of, well, this person littered, so I guess I can do it, or they don't care, so I don't care. And I think individualism has to do something with that. And I noticed that they were together on a lot more just basic concepts, whether you're just talking about cleanliness or the way you carry yourself or, you know, the way you go about handling your business and getting to work and being on time and things like that, you know. And I guess, but to touch on what you were talking about earlier about the rap game or the hip-hop game that you were talking about, I've been playing basketball all my life, and I've played on very diverse teams. In Northern Virginia, outside of D.C. So I've been, you know, playing with everybody, all types of girls from different places. And there's been a couple times that I have been, I should have been up for MVP, or maybe between me or a couple other sisters should have been up for MVP. And there's been two occasions I could recall that were pretty big deals to a lot of people where they didn't give MVP to anybody who really deserved it, but they would give it to a white girl. And I mean, a girl who should not even be considered as being even on an all-tournament team or anything like that. I mean, just somebody who just basically was a sixth man or something like that, if that. And I just realized that a lot of Black people will actually take away from other people's work and not support it because they would rather... It's like they feel like they're giving something to the white girl that she didn't have, or I'm not positive what it was, but I just felt like they think that they were giving her something, and these were girls who couldn't play, you know, so it wasn't about she was an all-around player and, you know, she maybe didn't have as many points as me or score as many points as me, but she was a good all-around player with a good attitude. I'm talking about people who shouldn't have been up for MVP or any type of award at that matter. But, you know, I just feel like there's a sense that we need to give white people something that we earn. And I felt like, you know, a lot of people think that you're supposed to deal with that and not say anything or feel any type of way about it because it's like, oh, you know, you suddenly feel bad for the white girl because she's playing with a bunch of sisters who know how to play, and so we should give her the Hart Award. You know, we should give her the MVP because she tried. And I know two cases in my own background where that's happened, where it definitely shouldn't have happened. And I think we like doing that, you know, and we'll take from each other to make somebody else, I guess, feel good or accepted, or I'm not really sure what it is. So I was, you know,
the people who gave her this recognition, were they black or were they white?
They were mostly black. I'm talking about specifically in tournaments. And the coaches from the other teams, you couldn't vote for MVP on your own team, so the other teams all their coaches would vote for the MVP. So this wasn't a team MVP, this was more tournament MVP, and it was mostly black male coaches. It was mostly black male coaches and black coaches at that. Not many white coaches, not many white female coaches. And it was in a way, because I asked my coach about it, and then my coach is going to tell me, well, you have plenty, you know, you have plenty of awards, you know, and that it wasn't, there was no explanation for it, you know. It was just more like, well, she tried, you know, and she put out a lot of heart, you know, and it was really, it's happened twice to me, and I know it's happened to other people too. And it's just, it just doesn't make any sense at all, you know. And everybody was just so happy with her because she tried, and she went out there, and she tried hard. Couldn't play, you know, but I've seen that happen in a lot of cases in athletics, you know.
Well,
just like, you know, a lot of people say Jeremy Lin was like that, you know.
Well, I mean, coming into contact, you have to understand, if you want to see who's going to bow down and who won't, just let them come in contact with some white folk. If it's white males, if it's black males, let them come into contact with a couple of black females that they feel like they have some power or authority over, and watch how they bow down. They will use that power and authority as a means to try to gain favor with, as opposed to be capable to. See, power in the hands of black males, because they are so intellectually and egotistically weak, power in their hands works the opposite. You see, in the hands of somebody who understands something, power works to enrich them. Black men use power to get little trick rewards. Not even big ones, just little trick rewards. To get some two-bit husky, or to try to just get the attention of, not even to get in the bed, but just get the attention of a non-black female, which is what I was saying before. They will sell out everything for that. Go read Montel Williams, I think it was his first book, where he describes how he met his first wife, Grace, I think it was, who was actually a stripper from his show, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Go look up Grace Williams, and she was actually on his show, according to his book, and she was on his show, and she was actually a stripper. You see, that's what black men use power and influence for. To get little trick-off rewards. And so you got to witness that firsthand. That's the mentality that they bring to the table, and that's what they'll do. That as long as they can get little trick-off rewards, man, they're happy. They will. This is what I was saying before, that they will give up everything, including their legacy, their inheritance, their lives, their children. Man, they'll give up everything. Everything. To get that. And you see, this kind of conversation is most offensive to them. This kind of conversation is offensive to Coonery. Coonery took a look at that Yahoo screen and didn't see anything wrong. Didn't feel anything at all. They just saw it and yay! And kept moving. They didn't even notice that anything was wrong. Because in their eyes, it can't be wrong. It can't be. I mean, all I had to do was whore out my culture. It can't be wrong. Didn't I get her bid? Can't be wrong. See how it works now?
Yeah. And I never thought, I never didn't think about it like that. I tried to tell myself that it's so confusing to me a lot of times, I'll admit, is I tried to think that they felt sorry, or, you know, what is it that they feel? Because like you said, it is a position of power. So I didn't think that they were coming down from their power to do that. But that makes a lot of sense what you're saying. I thought because they were in a position of power, they were being nice, you know, and trying to, yeah, I just kind of took it a different way. Like they just felt sorry for her or something. I never thought that maybe they were looking to be accepted even. And I can see that, you know, because that's it. And I just have so many experiences playing basketball with a bunch of diverse girls, you know, and just the way black women even treat, you know, different women. Like you're talking about the rapper Izzy or Iggy or whatever her name is. And, you know, she's, you know, I know a lot of black women who are like down for her, you know. I mean, they are, you know, she's the coolest thing. And they have every criticism for anyone else. And black women, we like to criticize each other. We like to criticize everything. But, you know, white person does it. You don't see, you know, anything that they're doing wrong, or you don't see it. So I definitely understand what you're saying. I wish that we were a little bit I just wish we were ready to, I guess, attack issues when they come up. But like you said, people don't see the issue. Like, that's very good what you just said. And people look at the Yahoo and they don't see it, I guess. It's not an issue for them. So maybe I'm trying to speak with people who they can't even understand the starting point where I'm coming from. And
well,
I guess
but
that's
the reason I brought up Montel, for example, is because not just so much about her, because, of course, that is what we're referring to, but how he says in the book that after the taping of that first show that she was on, that, like, he rushed out of the building or something like that? He rushed out of the building, and he floored it in his Nissan, I think it was, some little sports car. And going through the parking lot at the studio and stuff, they had speed bumps. And, like, he busted up the bottom of his car flying over those speed bumps. Busted up the bottom of his car just so she would see him so that he could wave to her before she left the studio parking lot. Now,
wow.
What I'm saying is, Gwendolyn, you are never going to be able to overcome that amount of sheer, shocking, astronomical kowtowing. You will not be able to do it. You won't. That is the type of mentality that will sell its mother, its father, its children, the grandchildren, and itself to the hottest, deepest, darkest, lowest, filthiest levels of hell. That's the kind of mentality you're dealing with there. That's the kind you're dealing with. And so what I'm saying is that this is a guy who had so much more than her, and look what he was willing to do just to get to wave at her? Not to even talk to her, just to wave at her. Just wave. And I'm telling you that that's what you witnessed in those basketball games. That's what we witnessed with Eminem. That's what we witnessed with Iggy Azalea. Uh-huh. That's what we witness all the time, that there is a strong segment of black society that is desperate to return to the plantations, and they see you and I as the enemy because we block the way. Because every time that we speak, we say, damn your plantation. And they're like, oh, hell no, 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 shut up. No, I'm going. Plantations are great. Rah, rah, plantation. Rah, rah. Don't listen to these dumb niggers. I'll go. Come on, Clarence. We'll go. And that's what you're up against. Gwen, as a female, I want you to understand something. Don't ever, ever, ever for the rest of your days underestimate the power of a fetish.
Oh.
And when I say fetishes, I'm not just talking about sexual. I'm talking about psychological. Because you do know a fetish isn't necessarily sexual. Serial killers have a fetish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, when you say it like that, you're like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, it's not just, it doesn't just necessarily have to be sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And many black people have a fetish for letting white supremacy be their dominatrix. That's what I mean to say. Many black people have a dominatrix fetish for white supremacy. They want white supremacy to tie them up, chain them up, treat them like a dirt and a dog, go through all this suffering just so white supremacy can come up to them at the end of all that and say, that's my little baby. And then walk off. For them, just that little bit of recognition and acknowledgement is enough of a reward to take on everything. They have a fixation and a psychological and emotional fetish for white supremacy. It is the dominatrix. They are the dominated. And you and I, every time that we defy white supremacy, they hate us for it because in their minds, it makes it harder for the dominatrix to come back. Because if we're strong, a dominatrix, by definition, does not deal with strong people. A dominatrix, by the very definition, has no interest in a strong person. And we always want to sit up here and talk about how white males play with dominatrixes. When a white male wants a dominatrix, who does he usually prefer?
A black woman.
Because he considers that to be the most humiliating thing. For black people, it works in reverse. For black people, it works in reverse. You see, a white man wants a black woman to be his dominatrix because he wants to feel genuinely low and dejected, and there's nothing lower than being submissive to a black woman. For black people, a dominatrix works in reverse when it comes to white people. For black people, that's just the cost of admission to being next to a white person. That's just the cost of admission. Now, you have to understand that when you look at things like Bojangles and stuff like that, Step and Fetch It, Amos and Andy, one of the things that they were most, Hattie McDaniels, one of the things that they were most well known for was what? Bowing down and catering to white children as if white children were their equals. You see, the white man and the white woman made it very clear, you are not our equal, Aunt Jemima. But they let them have reign over their children, so they got what into their minds?
Childlike manner.
They got it into their minds that me and these children are equals. They got it into their minds that me and these kids are all equals. And that's the mentality that you're up against.
Well, let me ask, because I guess going off what you just said, I mean, that was very powerful. So what is the effect? So other people, they can see and feel this from black people. This is not like something only black people can see or notice or feel. And really, I think other people kind of notice it before a lot of black people even notice these type of behaviors that we exhibit. Because I think white people, they look for those and they know what to look for. They know how it feels when they're around. Because I know that, you know, I used to work with a couple guys and there was this one big black guy. He didn't last for long. But he was a, you know, big, tall, strong guy. He used to come in with his deep voice, and he didn't play many games. He didn't last at the bank for very long. They didn't like that. But the guy who would come in, you know, with the feminine voice, he would soften his voice, and he wasn't gay, but he kind of sounded like he was gay maybe. But they loved him. I mean, they loved him. It was great. You know, the other guy didn't last but a few months. You know, and they just let him go. And then they, you know, I talked to him later, and he said that people felt uncomfortable around him, and some women had complained. And, you know, I asked him, did you say anything? What was this, sexual harassment or what was it? No, I didn't say anything to the women. So it turns out some women just complained, I guess, it was white women, complained for no reason, I guess. And I never saw anything. But so I think people can really tell very quickly, you know, when we exhibit these qualities, you know, they see them in men and women. They pick them up, and they know which people they want around, and they know which people, like you said, the dominatrix knows who the client's going to be, and they'll choose the client. They're not going to take, you know, you or me, you know, they're going to take them. And I do think people are willing to sell their soul, like you said. To me, even if you're willing to sit and be embarrassed for a second is too much for me. Forget selling my soul. I can't even deal with that stuff at work.
Just consider some of the clowns that you were arguing with today who were trying to call that split picture that I put up yesterday, the chick on the left, chick on the right, one was flabby, the other one was fit as she could be. And look at the guys who were arguing with you. For nothing more than, look at the booty on the fat one. And it's like, really? You're going to take all this blubber because you have a fetish for rear ends. Like guys who have a fetish for feet.
Mm-hmm.
She can look like Rosie O'Donnell, but if she's got cute feet, that is a turn-on to him.
That's true. And that's what those fetish guys do, you know? As long as you got nice feet or nice hands or whatever their fetish is.
Okay, well, what if their fetish is you're white? What if that's the fetish? Then
I never thought about it as a fetish. Wow. I never considered I always thought of something fun, you know, feet, hands or something like that, not skin as a fetish. And maybe I've seen that as a fetish. I've thought that a white woman would have a black man as a fetish. I think I've made that connection. But I don't know that I've made it the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, the only way that we can exclude race is if you are going to preclude that people do not see that there is no racial distinction in this world. We acknowledge that there's racial distinction with everything else. Why would we think that it would be excluded from sex?
Yeah.
You have
yeah.
plenty of black men who have a fetish for white acceptance. Take a look at, like, Norman Bates. He had a fetish for what? He wanted to be accepted by his mother.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be accepted by his mother. Now,
and it's just
that's where terms like edible come from. So in this case, you have a white supremacist complex, a white supremacist edible complex. They are looking for somebody who is going to give them the ability to do that. And Gwen cannot do that. And they've carried that clean off the plantations with them. How do I whore myself out? Somebody give me away. Somebody, please. So that's what they do. Are you okay there?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and bring another caller here then with you. Caller from 314, you're on Live with the Black Channel.
Hello.
Hello, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, it's Ariel from Missouri.
Hello, Ariel from Missouri. And what's on your mind, sister?
One thing I noticed when you were talking with that man is that you said that black people need to own something other than stores. And you mentioned something like internet marketing and stuff with computers. And I'll tell you right now, if any black person was to open up anything with computers, that would be like the first thing I would want to do, because I finally found out what I want to major in college is still computers. It's computer science. Like, I just figured it out. So I just wanted to point that out.
Well, here's the thing, okay? Ariel, you are going to have to accept a hard, difficult truth, okay? You cannot expect or wait for another black person to do anything.
Yeah.
You are going, if it's going to be, it is up to thee.
I said that in my head, but I didn't say it now, but I was like, one way or another, if I have to make the business, whichever one comes first, me doing it or it happens while I'm in college or, you know, either way, somebody, me or someone needs to do something with computers, make a computer company or something, because I know there's a lot of black people who are interested in that trade but don't really, I don't know, have much support in black communities to do that type of thing.
Well, here's the problem. The problem is they're looking at the wrong thing. We have to understand that the majority of black people have been completely cowed into submission and are completely servile and subservient to white supremacy. in their minds, all good things in America and all good things on Earth are reserved for white people.
Yep.
By definition, all good things are reserved for white people only. By definition.
Yeah,
so
I noticed that.
Mind, the concept that something could be black and then be good and well run, that's foreign to them. I don't know if you heard the young man who called in a couple of months ago, and I asked him, can you envision a world of black empowerment? Where the black do you have black doctors, black lawyers, black teachers, where the best and brightest at everything are black people? And his answer was a direct no. I can't really see that. No. That was his direct answer is no. I can't really see that.
If we had enough support, we could try. I mean, just because most big mainstream things are white or Asian and things like that doesn't mean we can't start. It doesn't always have to be stores. It doesn't have to be hair salons all the time. It doesn't have to be clothing stores all the time. It doesn't have to be music all the time. I mean, just some type of engineering-based anything might be good, like making anything, making video games, making DVDs, making anything that's new from a black person that's, you know, electronical could be a big hit, you know, bring a lot of jobs and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, but you have to first have the drive and the motivation to want to do that. That's where everything is going to come from. You have to have the drive and the motivation to want to have a situation where you are doing those kinds of things. If you don't, if you do not have that, then it's not going to occur. And right now, we are at a point in history where survival is on the line. The black people who want to survive are going to start doing what we should have finished doing 100 years ago. We are going to finish the work of building. We are going to finish the work of rebuilding Black Wall Street. We are going to do the work of building black empowerment. You see, we let ourselves get distracted because we were supposed to be building empowerment, and then we let a bunch of folk come and tell us that, nah, black empowerment's not what you need. Integration is what you need. Because we told ourselves that integration would stop the Klan, integration would stop racism. You get guns to stop the Klan, and you get economic empowerment to stop racism.
Yes, and that's another reason why I gave a little bit of money to your documentaries, because maybe some people, some black people, or all black people, or any black people, yeah, any, will see that documentary and say, this makes me want to do something with our economy, and maybe someone will get a spark to own some type of big business, not no store or anything like that. And that's another reason why I did that.
I mean, but don't forget yourself in the equation. I'm hearing you talking about everybody else. Understand something. Starting a business is not a business is not a social project, okay? You do not start a business because people need jobs. You start a business because that is your path to power, wealth, and influence. That's what you start a business for. You don't start a business because your cousin is unemployed. You don't start a business because your mama raised you in Section 8 housing. Well, not entirely. But that is not the reason that you start a business. You start a business because that is the path to power, wealth, and influence. That's what a business is for. Nothing else. Nothing
yeah,
else.
If I had a job, I'd save up some money.
But you're heading there, but to be totally honest with you, you got your mind in the right place. Get yourself. The reason that you get a high-paying skill is because that gives you entry into the capitalist system. You want to have a high-paying skill because, of course, who the hell wants to start out at the very bottom of the ladder? Get you a high-paying skill so that you can start as high up off of the ground as you can, and that will give you the breathing room and the wherewithal to build your business.
Yes, that is why I decided that my major would be in computer sciences, and my minor would be something in electrical repair, like CDs, things like that, because then I know you could work at a store, and then you work your way up in that store and end up being like the second owner and stuff like that, make a lot of money to save up so you can start your own business. Or maybe if you're really, really lucky, you might end up just owning it all together after, you know, primary owner, you know, things like a small computer store, things like that. That's why I really want to go into computer sciences as my major and then electrical repair as my minor, things like that.
Well, like I say, that's a good place for you to start, and that is where you want to begin with that kind of thing. But more than anything else, more than even the majors, your motivation for doing so is what you have to keep in mind. You have to stay motivated by being able to, build an economy for yourself. Building a business is supposed to be a self-centered enterprise. Now, it is engineered, of course, that it benefits other people, hopefully. But if you are not a success in this, you can forget about anything else. Now, once you have your finances straightened out, then you can see about going off and being as philanthropic as you want to be. That's fine. But you can't help anybody if your situation is not as straight as it could possibly be. You're not going to help anybody if you don't get that taken care of. So remember, your primary motivation is not because this will heal the world. Your primary motivation is supposed to be because this is your path to power, wealth, and influence. Everything else is secondary. Every other consideration is secondary. That's the only one that matters. Now, are you still 16, Ariel?
Yes, my birthday is in July, actually.
Okay, it's in July. That's fine. Now, what do you think about Iggy? Since you are part of the demographic that we all want to talk to here, what do you think about Iggy Azalea?
I don't listen to Iggy Azalea.
Well, that's a good first answer. What do you think about Eminem?
I don't listen to Eminem.
Then why is that?
I don't listen to rap music in general. I actually listen to something a lot crazier called EDM. It's short for electronic dance music. So, yeah, I don't really listen to hip-hop or rap.
And why is that?
I have no idea. It's just sounds. It just sometimes sounds like express things in a way that rap really doesn't for me. It's like certain sounds can express my feelings, emotions, however I'm thinking at the moment, and that's kind of why I like EDM so much.
Okay. What is your, now is that like dubstep?
Yes, that is dubstep.
Okay. What is your favorite dubstep song right now?
I don't have a favorite song. I have a favorite producer.
Well, I think we all know Skrillex, so.
No, not Skrillex. Not Skrillex at all.
Okay. Who would that be then?
Okay, now don't. Now, the name sounds weird, but I like. The name of the artist is called Midnight Tyrannosaurus. I know it sounds weird, but I just like the things he makes. Like, for example, he uses clips from audio or from TV, things like that, and the hype of the song, with including the sample he uses, just makes the song well, you know? So that's why I like him more than anything.
Midnight.
Midnight Tyrannosaurus, yes.
for Midnight Tyrannosaurus. Gwen, we've come a long damn way from Earth, Wind, and Fire, haven't we? We've come a long damn way from Frankie Beverly and Faith. I thought NWA was pushing it.
Yeah.
Midnight Tyrannosaurus.
Wow.
New generation. New.
Next up, Jolly Rancher Fat Burger. I can see it now.
Who's Dubstep?
Dubstep is a music genre, okay? It's really like techno with a lot of... They just do a lot more processing on the artifacts of the music, basically. I mean, it's not a new type of music per se, but it's just a genre where they do a lot of heavy, heavy, heavy synthesis, heavy processing of musical instruments. And it's usually mostly synthesizers, but they do a lot of heavy processing of the musical notes and stuff. So it's just that's all dubstep really is. It's not really a whole lot
like
different.
Those bass lines?
Some of it is. I mean, it can be different types. I mean, Korn had Skrillex, produce a song for. So there's still a rock band, but with him doing it, he just synthesized the hell out of everything. So that's basically what dubstep is. It's nothing that's going to impress us. There's going to be a lot more noise than anything else. But there's my real issue with it. It's not just because I'm getting old. I'm a musician. I know music is supposed to have instruments. And what I'm saying is that they don't mind that because the young people today, because we did not hold the line on music. We didn't hold the line on that. We allowed them to dumb down all the musics. And now they're handing them dubstep. And these kids, here's the problem. Here's the reason why I asked you that, Ariel. I asked you that because I wanted to find out what your favorite dubstep song is. And you answered my question. I don't have one.
Yeah.
Now,
they're all
the
same. They don't have any difference.
Okay, that's my point. They're all the same, but you said, but I really listen to dubstep. Why are you listening to it if you're not that enthused and it's all the same?
I don't even know. I don't even know. It's weird. I play an instrument. This is so odd.
Stop. Halt. Halt. This is your assignment. I want you to get something to write this down with, understand?
Okay, hold on.
We have got
to get my laptop.
We have got to save this child, y'all.
Oh, my God. This is crazy because I play an instrument. I play the tuba. Why don't I listen to regular music? I don't know.
She plays the tuba. In other words, she plays the only instrument that technically may not qualify as a musical instrument, but...
Okay, I got my laptop.
Okay. We have got to save this child, y'all. Alexis, have you ever listened to Sam Cooke, Change Gonna Come?
No.
Okay, his name was Sam Cooke, S-A-M-C-O-O-K-E, Sam Cooke. And the name of the song is A Change Gonna Come. You can go look it up on YouTube. Seal did a remake of it, but I recommend you listen to the original. Now, Sam was from the 60s. And you're saying, what? That's like twice as old as I am. Yes, that's my point. that's my point, is that there's a reason why we're bringing him up. You need to hear that song. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute, why you need to hear it. You need to listen to Sam, first of all. You need to listen to Marvin Gaye. What Marvin Gaye? Any of them. You can't go. I can just drop you off there. You can't go wrong. White folk been trying to imitate Marvin now for 40 damn years, and ain't never going to get it right. So they can just stop. Justin Timberlake, if he woke up tomorrow as Marvin Gaye, he would probably just sit in his house watching his fingernails grow. Like Howard Hughes. I mean, he probably would just never leave, never bathe, never anything. I'm Marvin Gaye. And then Britney Spears walked in the room. Shut up, I'm Marvin Gaye.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to play this right now because I want to hear
this. No, you ain't going to play it right now because I'm talking. All right. But, no, you ain't going to play it right now. If you want a couple of recommendations, Inner City Blues, you need to hear that one. Especially a young person like you. You need to hear Mercy, Mercy Me.
Wow, this is so crazy.
Those are two songs in particular that you as a 16-year-old, you need to hear. And I'm going to explain to you why in just a few minutes. You need to hear Earth, Wind, and Fire. Everybody needs to hear Earth, Wind, and Fire. But you need to hear Earth, Wind, and Fire. There are two songs in particular that you need to hear. You need to hear System of Survival. And you need to hear Sunday Morning.
Oh, what?
Now, Gwen ain't
quite
old.
You know what's weird? Like, I've heard a lot of older songs, but I never knew any names of them. Except one I played in band I actually like. But it's not like a spiritual song. It's just weird.
We have to remember, because Gwen is like 28, and I'm 37. And we have to remember that, I mean, technically speaking here, I mean, Gwen, you were in high school when Alexis here was still in elementary school. So even the stuff that you were listening to in high school, she was just finishing up singing along with Bert and Ernie.
Mr. Black, it's Aria.
Hold on a second. Well, I'm concerned. This stuff right here, I mean, she's 20 years younger than me. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff that I'm about to get to, she wasn't even born yet. And no wonder she has no concept of it because her parents did not give it to her. White people, why do you think you have a national anthem? The national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, was based on a drinking song. It was based on an old drinking song from a pub. Yeah, you all don't know that. George Washington, the boys, that song was actually based on a drinking song. And they converted it to be the national anthem. And why I'm saying that to you is that white people do not let their children forget. Jews do not let their children forget. The Japanese do not let their children forget where they came from. If you listen to Japanese anime, they ain't sitting there playing a bunch of modern hip-hop music, except for the stuff meant to go straight to America. So what they consume for themselves plays their music. It plays their music in their language with their instruments. You go listen to some of that stuff, and they play specifically Japanese instruments.
Yep.
They pass those things down to their children. We as black folk are waiting for white people to pass our culture down to our children, just like we're expecting them to educate our kids, just like we're expecting them to give political education to our kids, just like we're expecting them to teach financial education to our kids. And then you wonder why your children are worshiping the altar of Marshall Mathers, a meth and prescription drug addicted jackass from Detroit who can't figure out if he hates his mama or loves her. Silence.
Oh, my bad.
It will not be important. We'll come back to
Mr.
that.
Mr. Black.
Yes, Alexis, since you got to say it, go ahead and say it.
My name is Ariel.
I mean Ariel. Why don't you call her Alexis?
I know this song, this Sam Cooke song. I hear it a lot.
I keep saying Alexis because I keep looking in the chat room and I see Alexis in there, and that's why I keep saying Alexis. So I need to quit looking over there. Don't look at the chat room when you're on the phone because it'll just mess you up. Now that you've gotten to Earth, Wind, and Fire, and I'm going to miss some stuff. If you haven't heard pretty much everything from Michael Jackson, you need to.
I've heard this song, A Change Is Gonna Come. I heard it before.
Okay. You may have heard Seal doing it. I hope you heard the original. If you haven't seen the movie Malcolm X by Spike Lee, you need to, because there's a lot of your history that you've missed. But there's a reason why. Turn that off right now, because I told you not to be even doing that.
Sorry.
Stop. This is what I was telling you before. Halt. Quit. Because your attention is divided, and you're going to miss some things. Because I'm not just naming these things for nothing. When you go to Michael Jackson, you need to listen to one song in particular, Man in the Mirror. See, I'm not just naming stuff for fans. Need to listen to one in particular, Man in the Mirror and Leave Me Alone. Contrary to what most people tell themselves, the most important songs he ever made were Man in the Mirror and Leave Me Alone. Contrary.
Those are my favorite.
Okay. Calm down. Ariel, you ain't even supposed to be doing that right now.
Next I know up, the song. I didn't even play it. I know the
okay.
song.
Next up is Guy, G-U-Y.
Yeah.
And you can go follow Aaron Hall if you want to after that.
Mm-hmm.
You can play like a couple of good songs after that, but that's not really for young people. About the cast is for young people.
That's
now, we're going to talk about rap music because you have not actually heard real rap music. We got to start
all
with
right.
Rakim. So you can go start. I wouldn't start you on his first album. Let's start with the second album. Eric B. and Rakim, Follow the Leader. And you can just start with that whole album.
Oh, Lord.
Then you can go. Now you can go on to the Public Enemy if we got to. That's fine. You can go with Public Enemy just wherever you want to. You need to listen to that. And if you want to hear a real rapper, Eric Rakim, the DOC, and the reason you hadn't heard the DOC is because if you didn't hear that first album, you never actually heard him because he didn't really make another album after that. I mean, he released some albums, but he didn't actually make another one after that. Now, there's a reason why I'm naming that. Ariel, are you going to listen to me or are you going to ask questions?
No, I'm going to listen to you.
Okay, just write this down. Save your questions until after class. There's a reason why I'm naming those people, though. Now, if you're going to do that, you need to start there because everything after 93 is a wash.
Yeah.
It was all over after that. Death Row hits
okay.
the scene. After Death Row, it's all over. After Death Row, it's all over. There really isn't anything after that. Now, I can name EPMD. I can name Kool Moe D, you know. I can throw those in there, but I want you to start with that so you'll have an idea of what time period to look for. I'm just going to tell you right now, don't go after 93 because there's nothing else after that. There really, really isn't. I mean, there's a few people, but there's so few of them that they stick out, you know, like three-horned unicorns. Like, wow, look at that one. Is that a unicorn or a triceratops? Now, there's a reason why I'm naming all of those for you, okay? And there's a reason why I named that. Ariel, you sat here and told us that I asked you, you said that you don't listen to rap. I said, what do you listen to? Dubstep. I asked you, who's your favorite dubstep song? You said, I don't have one. You didn't say, I don't know. You said, I don't have one. I don't have one. What is the good of listening to music if you don't even, if it's not making an impact on your life? And as I started out at the beginning of the broadcast, music is part of your cultural legacy. And you're telling us that one of the major components of mankind's cultural legacy, and you have no connection to it. How are you going, what good is it going to do us to make a business person of you, and you have no concept of a cultural legacy through music? Because you do not know how to guide your children back to Africa through their music. You don't know how to tell them the connection between this and Africa, between this and who and what they are. You are unable to give that to them. And all the money on earth will not buy that. All the money on earth will not purchase or fix a mother who screwed up her children's legacy because she wasn't able to teach it to them correctly. And that is why you have to do that. I put my hands straight up in the air. The first time I heard Sam Cooke was the movie Malcolm X by Spike Lee. And Spike had a thing for putting old songs in his movies. Well, he did that with Sam Cooke. And I mean, the reason that we talk about Sam today is because of that movie. If it hadn't been for Spike Lee, we would not be talking about Malcolm X or Sam Cooke to this day. Both of them probably would have been completely forgotten if someone else hadn't come along and done it. But a lot of us got introduced to Sam Cooke through Spike Lee. A lot of us. Spike understood the need to pass this down because you just assume that the kids are hearing what you're hearing and they're not. Hell, these children today ain't even heard. A lot of y'all haven't even heard N.W.A. Most of you haven't. You know Dre from Snoop Dogg, but you don't know Dre from N.W.A. And even if you do know N.W.A., you hadn't actually heard the albums.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is that if you are going to, what good is it going to do for us to sit up here and give you all this stuff if you have no connection to our legacy with it? The other thing is about the music itself. You mentioned dubstep and the problem with EDM is that what you said about it, well, it's the music mainly. Well, not really even the music, the sound. So what you're saying is that I like music that isn't music. And the less like music my music is, the more I like it. That's just what you said. The less like music my music is, the more I like it. So now they've introduced something to you. They called it music, but it's psychologically divorcing a generation from it. And if it's a fad, that's even better because it's going to come and it's going to leave. So it destroys Ariel and leaves their children intact. So it'll divorce you from a concept of music, and you can't pass it on to your kids, but they'll be able to pass it on to theirs just fine. And you haven't made all the connections because your folks have not helped you make those connections. I shouldn't be sitting here saying Earth, Wind, and Fire with you saying who? Every black person should have an obligation. Another one I missed out on there, the Gap Band. Not Charlie Wilson because he's done fell off the damn reservation, but Gap Band. You need to go look that up. And I know the music may sound a little old and a little strange, but that was dubstep before dubstep was dubstep, by the way.
Wait, what was the name of it?
The Gap Band. G-A-P Band. And their first hit song was You Drop the Bomb on Me. And that was code speak. See, back then, black men didn't sit up here on YouTube jumping up and down like jackasses. We were able to fight psychologically effectively because we mastered code speak. Gap Band, the letters G-A-P, an acronym for Greenwood, Archer, and Pine from Tulsa, Oklahoma. The Black Wall Street bombing of Tulsa,
wow.
Oklahoma. Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. And Charlie Wilson and the Gap Band, they took that name to commemorate what happened there. Black folk had no idea, and the song, You Drop the Bomb on Me, because that's what happened in Tulsa. They had they were flying in a plane and dropping dynamite from the plane. The white folk got an airplane and dropped dynamite from the airplane. And that was how they bombed the Black Wall Street of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so the Gap Band, in an attempt to prevent our people from forgetting this event, commemorated it in a song. You dropped the bomb on me. You dropped the bomb on me, baby. And by throwing that baby on there, white folk went totally over their heads. And at the end of the song, you'll notice that for those of you who hadn't, just kept repeating it over and over again at the end of the song. The whole end of the song is just them. They must have said, you dropped the bomb on me a couple dozen times. They must have said it a couple of dozen times. Must have. And why do you think they kept saying it over and over again like they did? Because they wanted you to get it. But they also did a bunch of other good music as well. All of My Love, you can go look that up. Outstanding, that's another classic. But I want you to go listen to everything, but start with You Drop the Bomb on Me so that you can understand why this is important. so you can understand why that song is important and why the music is important. Ariel, you're not supposed to listen to music that does not teach you something. The purpose of music is to enrich you as a human being. And what you're saying is that I listen to music that contributes nothing to me as a person. Hell, I like music to be less music. So why are you wasting your time listening? Why? There's a reason why. Let me walk you through those songs I just gave you, okay? Through those artists and through those songs. Sam Cooke, who was making music during the civil rights struggle. A Change Gonna Come. Everybody knows the beginning of it. I was born by the river in a little tent. And just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but the change gonna come. But that was not the reason it resonates with us, and that wasn't the reason that Spike Lee chose it. And that isn't the reason that you and the rest of us should remember that song. You should remember that song because that song was basically for its time a modern-day slave hymn. To remind you that you are not free, and that is what the civil rights struggle is about, because you're not free. Why do you say that, TBA? Because of the second stanza of the song. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, because I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. And it's been a long time coming, but I know the change gonna come. And that line, the change gonna come, that's from the Bible. Apostle Paul, I believe it was, talking about till my change come. You all can go look it up for yourselves. There's a reason why this needs to be taught to you. So I go to see my brother, and we know what kind of brother he's talking about. He's not talking about black folk. I go see my heavenly brother, and I say, brother, won't you help me, please? But he always winds up knocking me down on my knees. Now, at that time in history, who's knocking black folk down on their knees? Hell, did they ever stop? That was what the significance of that song is, that you need to understand that that is part of your cultural legacy. Because if you don't remember what happened in civil rights, I'd be a damn fool to think that you understand the significance of slavery. And you can't wait until the damn police got you in the back of a squad car, head busted open, Ariel, before you understand your legacy and that you are black in America. That's the wrong damn time to figure out you black in America and that slavery really does mean something. That's the wrong damn place to be figuring it out. It's too late by the time they got you there. You're supposed to figure that out way before he called, but way before he grabbed you. You're supposed to figure that out way before we got there. Way before it ever got to that. Marvin Gaye, Inner City Blues. Moonshot. When talking about shots to the moon, rockets going to the moon, spending on the have-nots, money, we make it, and before we get it, they take it, the income tax, trigger-happy policing, that's all in Inner City Blues, and that was before both of us were born. Nobody on this phone right now was alive when Marvin put that song out. Not even me. I'm pretty sure it wasn't before 76. So, not even me. Not even me.
Jason, can I recommend this song?
Yes.
Goodness, and it escapes my mind, but one of my favorite songs, I guess, was that Strange Fruit. Oh, and it's been remade. It's been remade a couple of times.
Well,
but,
she can look that up also. That might be a... you can look it up. It's a few people who made that song. It was remade.
Mm-hmm.
But it's called Strange Fruit. It doesn't really matter who you hear it from because it's all basically the same. But not about the social... It's not about that part of it that I'm concerned about. What I'm saying is that music is supposed to teach you something. And then give you Iggy Azalea, who teaches you nothing. Katy Perry, who teaches you how to kiss on girls. And they want to rob you and rape you. Because you're doing everything except concentrating on what you're supposed to be concentrating on. Everything except that. And Ustream hasn't been giving us a problem for a while here, so I'm hoping that I got that straightened out. We'll see. I had a few things going on a little while ago. I'm hoping it's gotten that straightened out. But Earth, Wind, and Fire was the late 70s, early 80s when they started coming to prominence. System of Survival. It starts off with, and you ought to see the music video, actually, not just the song. Although I think the song plays just like the music video when they're playing clips from the news and you hear Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan had just became president by then. And Earth, Wind, and Fire was trying to send a message to our people. Guess what's getting ready to happen? The have-nots about to have a whole lot less. System of Survival. The human race is running over me. I work a job from 9 to 5 just trying to make a living. A plastic face on satellite TV. He's talking about is give and take. He's taking and I'm giving. So I dance. It's my system of survival. On city nights, I walk the streets in fear while politicians talk about a paperwork solution. Sound familiar? Sounds like the guy in the White House today. And Earth, Wind, and Fire was telling you about this 30 years ago. 30 years ago. And they put it to a jingle, so I dance. It's my system of survival. But did you get the title of the song? System of Survival. They're letting you know, brothers and sisters, they ain't bull jiving out here. It's survival now. And our people did not listen. Because right after Earth, Wind, and Fire, who came to prominence? Michael Jordan. And after we got Air Jordans, we kind of just forgot everything else, didn't we?
Yeah.
Kind of forgot everything else. And these young children need to hear that so that they can understand that we know the way out of this because we've been there and saw this. And if this is still true after 30 plus years, then you found the truth. You found something to keep with you. Man in the mirror, self-explanatory. Leave me alone is explanatory to understand what was going on with us as black people at that time. They were messing with Michael Jackson as soon as Thriller passed Elvis. It was a nonstop campaign against him. They could not stand the fact that a black man had white women around the world falling out and crying. He was famous at his concerts. They had hysteria, delirium, ambulances on standby. The famous video of him, I think when he arrived in France or wherever it was, with 100 police officers running down the ramp, jogging down the ramp with him to keep the crowd away from him. This was a black man who had white people around the world bowing down to him. Next thing you know, the media went on a jihad, and like the Romans trying to take Carthage, they went on a 20-year siege against Michael Jackson because he represented a black man that white people showed subservience to. We'll be damned if that's going to happen. Doesn't matter what else was going on. He represented a black man who was in a superior position to white people. And you couldn't knock him off his game because he didn't get elected to it. You couldn't move him because he hadn't been elected. He got it on his own. He had power that you did not give him. What drove them crazy about Michael Jackson was he was a black man who gained power that you never gave him. And since you did not give it to him, you could not take it from him. That was what drove them nuts about Michael Joseph Jackson. And the idea that other black men might catch on to that. That other black men might finally wake up after 150 years and realize that the only freedom is power that they did not give you. And that was why they had to put big money into promoting black men thinking of something other than power. When Ice-T put out his second album, because I think his first album was Rhyme Pays, second album was Power. But that was because Ice-T came from what? The Michael Jackson era. Look at Breakin'. And he understood it's about power. You take a look at N.W.A. Life ain't nothing but women and money. And then they got you onto women as quick as they could. Ain't that right, Two Live Crew? They diluted the formula. They poisoned it as quickly as they could. It ain't about money. It's about money and hoes. It ain't about money and hoes. It's about money, hoes, clothes, cars. Do you see how much they've diluted it now? And what do black men spend most of their time talking about on Facebook and Twitter? Can we get some sex? Can we get some sex? That was the benefit of watering down the formula. They've totally forgotten the money part. Did you notice that? The money part has been totally discarded. It's all about hoes, clothes, hoes, clothes, hoes, Blues Clues, hoes, clothes. But that was what they taught us. There's a great song that was put out by a guy called Total Control. You all ought to go look that song up. It's from the second Guy album. It's called Total Control. Talks about their walk through the entertainment industry. Y'all to go look that song up and hear it for yourselves. They put out a lot of good music, and I want you to listen to that one because that's what music is supposed to do for you. It is supposed to teach you something about yourself. And it doesn't do that anymore because they don't want you trying to – they don't want an intelligent music customer. They want somebody like you, Ariel, who says banging and jangling of songs is music. Don't you know how easy you just made it for them to sell music to you? Hell, it ain't even got to be music anymore. The audience is so dumbed down now that banging on pots and pans, they'll call that music. You know how cheap that'll be to produce? Man. We'll be able to make an album in what? Used to take us a month, now it'll take us what? A week? Hell, maybe a day. Beyonce said that she wrote that song Survivor. Quote, quote, I'm quoting Beyonce now. I wrote Survivor in like... Quote, I wrote Survivor in like 15 minutes. I'm quoting. I wrote Survivor in like 15 minutes. I'm quoting. Go look it up for yourself.
I believe.
I wrote Survivor in like 15 minutes. That's why I want you to understand what music is supposed to do for you. Rakim with Follow the Leader. Third stanza, a purified freestyle. Lyrics are fury. My third eye makes me shine like jewelry. Rakim was the first rapper who hit heavy, heavy, heavy about Islam and getting black people to get back to Africa, not just blackness, not just black consciousness, but pan-Africanism. Not to mention he's the best damn rapper ever. But he was heavy, heavy about pan-Africanism, and he would always talk about the third eye. That's my eye. That's Kemeticism. That's Egypt, black Egypt, my third eye. And he talked about it all the time and made no bones about what the third eye was. And who are the only people who qualify for the third eye? Which is what Kemet taught us. No wonder they want to get you as far away from Rakim as they can, huh? No wonder they want to get you off in the club. Let me buy you a drink. They want to get you as far away from that as they can. Can you imagine a generation of young black people today talking about their third eye? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine what that would be like? Public enemy, shady, hazy shade of criminal. Go listen to that song. Go watch the video more than anything. And when you see Oliver North taking the oath to tell the truth and then lie, that's all. While you're at it, if you're going to listen to Public Enemy, go listen to By the Time I Get to Arizona. Ask yourself who was senator at the time from Arizona. Go look up the history of that song. Songs are supposed to mean something, Ariel. If you are consuming something in your brain and it don't mean nothing, you need to be asking yourself questions about, why am I consuming this? Why am I consuming this if it doesn't actually do anything? We got a word for things that you consume that don't do anything healthy for you. Junk food. We have a word for that.
There's self-destruction, too.
Well, we can go down the discography later, but we want to keep it small. Once she gets started, she'll go looking for the rest on her own. But as far as the DOC, you need to hear what a real rapper sounds like for a change. That's why I'm throwing that in there. Tupac, unfortunately, I cannot recommend Tupac. And the reason that I cannot is because Tupac let himself get whored out by the industry. I'm not going to sit up here and make bones about it. He let that happen. So be it. And like I say, we basically have to stop there, the end. Because I can't think of anything in the last 10 years that really sticks out at me. There were a few flashes, but nothing significant. And you need to understand, Eric, that music is supposed to contribute to your life. How can it contribute to your life? I was waiting for you to say what song you wanted because I was going to ask you what the song was and what it talked about. But you didn't even make it that far. And unfortunately, most kids today can't make it that far. Music is supposed to tell you something in the words. That's why music is supposed to have words. Jazz is a wonderful thing. But music with words is what tells you something. It contributes to your life. It contributes to your life. At least it's supposed to. And what you told me is that I consume something that does nothing for my life. And we're hearing so much stuff now with people totally ignorant of what it means. Even for some of the stuff that's been redone. Gwen, you remember when Biggie got killed and P. Diddy put out that song, Every Breath You Take?
Mm-hmm.
With Faith Evans muling her way through it.
Yeah.
Okay. Ariel, have you ever heard the original song by Sting, Every Breath You Take? Was it Sting and the Police at the time? I think it was still the Police. Every Breath You Take.
Mm-hmm.
Ariel, have you ever heard that?
No.
Okay. For those of you who do not know, and Gwen, you may not know, you all need to know things. You need to know things. Don't just think and don't believe. You actually need to know things. Let me explain to you, Ariel, real quick why music is important and why the meaning of music matters. Gwen, did you like that song either by the Police or by P. Diddy, Every Breath You Take?
No.
Okay, no. I don't mean if it was your favorite. I think most people like the jingle of it and whatnot.
Not the sting.
You all don't.
But,
okay. Quiet, Gwen. Just be quiet. Never mind. Just stop. When Sting wrote that song, you all don't know what that song is about. Every breath you take, every move you make, every smile you fake, I'll be watching you. Today we would call that song stalking. No, I'm serious. It is about a man who is obsessed with, I guess you can say a woman, but with a somebody. Oh, can't you see you belong to me? How my cruel heart aches with every breath you take. See, that's why nobody ever wants to go beyond just the chorus of song. They don't ever want to go beyond that because if you actually read the actual lyrics, you will see what Sting was really saying to you. Oh, can't you see you belong to me? How my cruel heart aches with every breath you take. Since you've gone, I've been lost without a trace. I look and smile, and I only see your face or something like that. You get the idea behind that. And that wasn't the only one. I've talked about this before. He did another song. The follow-up, there was, because there was actually a follow-up, if you consider it a sequel, to Every Breath You Take, which was Wrapped Around My Finger. Wrapped Around My Finger was basically the sequel to Every Breath You Take. And if you look at the lyrics of that song, you'll realize that that one isn't very far off from Every Breath You Take. At the bridge of the song, before he ends the song out, you'll hear him singing there. Devil and the deep, the whole beginning of the song, he's talking about basically how he's this thrall to this woman. And, you know, he's, that she's playing with his life and everything like that. And I'll be wrapped around your finger, wrapped around your finger, wrapped around your finger. That's the name of the song. Wrapped around your finger. I'll be wrapped around your finger. And before the end of the song, devil and the deep blue sea behind me, vanish in the air, you'll never find me. I will watch your face turn to alabaster, that means pale white, when you find your servant is your master, and you'll be wrapped around my finger. And the rest of the song finishes out just like that. You'll be wrapped around my finger. I'm giving you all an education on this because words mean things and music means something. I've already told you all about Phil Collins in the Air of the Night. If you all have heard Phil Collins in the Air of the Night, I can feel it coming in the Air of the Night. It's that second stanza you ought to be listening to. I'm sorry, the third stanza, I think it is, off the top of my head. No, second stanza, I think it was. If you told me you were drowning, I would not lend a hand. I've seen your face before, my friend, but I don't know if you know who I am. Oh, but I was there and saw what you did. I saw it with my own two eyes. So you can wipe off that grin. I know where you've been, and it's all been a pack of lies. Phil Collins, Air of the Night. What's happening in Phil Collins' life at the time that he wrote Air of the Night? He was getting divorced from his first wife. Coincidence? Who, Phil? If who was drowning, you would not lend a hand. Who? Because this song sounds very personal now that I look at these lyrics. Who? Because when you think about that event, that kind of sounds like, was he doing something that would make somebody very, very angry with them? I wonder. Words are supposed to mean things. Music is supposed to mean something. Music is never supposed to become meaningless. And when you've allowed these people to take something like music and transform it into something meaningless, that's a problem. Because you've robbed us of our ability. Music touches us in a way that nothing else does. And you've robbed us of a very powerful tool that we could use to communicate with you with. I'm getting feedback from somebody or something. Let me see if I can track down who that might be. Yeah, it's your phone, Ariel.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you might wanna, if you got me on speaker or something, you need to turn those off because it's
okay,
hearing.
I'll take you off speaker.
Yeah, I shouldn't be on speaker in the first place. In any case, my real point is that a lot of you, somebody in the chat room posted that, yeah, the first time they heard it was from Grand Theft Auto 5, and I think they actually did a remix version of Air of the Night. I don't know if that's the original they have in Grand Theft Auto or a remake, but they are reintroducing their older music. Now, they bring y'all newer stuff, but they're reintroducing their older stuff to you, and you're getting introduced to Phil Collins, who I don't have a problem with Phil Collins, but what I'm saying is that do you actually understand what you're hearing?
Yeah.
do actually understand what you're hearing. Bone Thugs and Harmony took another Phil Collins song, Take Me Home, and all they did was the chorus of it. But it's basically a song about being a prisoner.
That's a good song.
So take me home, because I don't remember. I've been a prisoner all my life, and I can see you, but I don't remember. So take me home. Lord, what I wouldn't give for some black folk who sing about something substantive. I am to death of hearing about clubs and grabbing your ass. But that was why the music industry promoted R. Kelly, because they knew that R. Kelly, by promoting him, a poison pill, you need to go look up what a poison pill is, something with a candy coating on it. They gave you R. Kelly to help divorce you from Marvin Gaye. You're not singing about inner city blues anymore, because inner city blues was telling you about white supremacy. R. Kelly is telling you about the ghetto, but he's never talking about white people. Has R. Kelly ever made a song where he pointed the finger of blame at white supremacy for anything? Heaven, I Need a Hug. All these beefing albums, and guess who you're not talking about anymore? Gap Band was about fighting back against white supremacy. Michael Jackson made a couple of songs that led you. They don't. All I want to say is that they don't really care about us. Go look that one up while you're at it, Ariel. Michael Jackson, they don't care about us. And they were mad as hell at him about that song. And not just because of the Jewish reference in there as well. Not just because of that. They were mad because this is Michael Jackson talking about white supremacy. There's just some things that they don't want you to see. But if Martin Luther was living, he wouldn't let this be. And I don't know if he said if Malcolm X was living, but I don't know if he said if Malcolm X was living in that song or not. I have to go back and think whether or not. I know he said if Martin Luther was living. But I don't know if he said if Malcolm X was living. And what I'm saying is that eventually he wound up making another song, DS. He called it DS. Now, the prosecuting attorney who prosecuted him the first time, his name was, I want to say it was, I better not have been Dom Stetton. Dom Stetton or Tom Stetton. You all can go look that up for yourselves. I think he used DS to mask it. His name has been Tom Stetton. Tom Stetton is a cold man. But in the song, he's saying, like, Dom Stetton is a cold man. And at the very end of the song, Dom Stetton is a cold man. Dom Stetton is a cold man. Dom Stetton is a cold man. Pow. Gunshot. A lot of folk didn't like that one. A lot of people did not like that one. Hello, prosecuting attorney Stetton. We made a jingle for you. Congratulations. Michael Jackson just made you immortal. You think on a black man with that kind of power? As I look down at my diamond-encrusted piece, thinking no one man should have all that power. What the police officer said when Malcolm X was able to disperse a large group of black people on his own. No one man should have all that power. The system's broken. The schools are closed. The prison's open. We ain't got nothing to lose. Everybody, we rolling. With some light-skinned girls and some Kelly Rowlands. In this white man's world, we the ones chosen. So good night, cruel world. I'll see you in the morning. Next thing you know, Kanye West went from being the darling of the white media to They don't have anything good to say about him. Even though his mother had just died, they were relentless on him.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when you buck back against white supremacy, they never forget and they never forgive. And when they get on your ass, they don't leave. They don't leave. They were making fun of him for making the video with Kim Kardashian riding on the motorcycle with him. What was there so funny about that? What was there to mock about that? With all the acid trip albums that Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones made, what was there to mock about that? It was because we heard Power, that was why. We heard Power. And if you take a look at the symbolism in that Power video by Kanye West, the symbolism in that thing is overwhelming. The Egyptology in there is overwhelming. And not to mention the God references are overwhelming. By the way, if y'all haven't seen the Power video, that's one of the few things I can recommend from the last 10 years. Go see Power, because that one is just overwhelming in that video. If you ever take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
He's got Horus, I believe it is, hanging around his neck.
Mm-hmm.
Horus or Ra, but most people, I think most people identify it as Horus. And he's got the woman who's the angel. I think she's sitting at his left hand. I wonder how many people got the symbolism of that one. Gwen, did you get the symbolism of that one? The angel on his left side, did you get the symbolism of that?
No.
Okay.
Was he sitting between two?
Stop. If you'll take a look at the video, you're talking about the two horned cherubim that were in front of him.
Oh.
No, there's a woman with wings sitting on his left side. She's sitting next to Kanye, actually sitting at his feet on his left side. Why is that woman 90. With wings sitting there? Oh, that's upsetting me. Why is the woman with wings sitting by his left side? She's sitting by his left side because if you'll remember the Bible, in the Bible, it describes the throne of God. And it says that at the throne of God, it is Jesus who sits at the right hand of the Father. Sound familiar? Jesus sits at the right hand of the Father. Well, if Jesus sits at the right hand, who sits at the left? Just a little bit of something for you to think about. If Jesus sits at the Father's, at God's right hand, who sits at the left? Thinking it over?
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry.
This is what you get for Googling while I'm talking, Ariel. You're not going to be much of a business owner with attention split like that. It's not going to work out so well. In the Bible, well, not in the Bible, but there are people who in classic literature, if I say classic, I use that term loosely, but in classic literature, the devil is often identified or described as being a woman, not a man. If you take a look at Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ, it's actually a woman who is the actress who's the devil in the Garden of Gethsemane, but they shave off her eyebrows because Mel Gibson's goal was to make it where it's androgynous, where there is no clear sexual identity. Why did Mel Gibson not want to identify the devil definitively as a male? Because he is also aware that there are many accounts that in literature that identify the devil as a female. So when he wants to remove that mental obstruction from you, that whether you in your mind think of the devil as a woman or a man, his movie is not going to distract you. So that was, now, the director was the director of Demolition Man. It's hard for me to pronounce his last name. It's Brambilla. I believe is how you pronounce his last name, is Brambilla. And I don't know if it was his choice or Kanye's choice to do that particular bit of imagery, but I caught that immediately. There's nobody at Kanye's right hand, but there is an angel, specifically a female, sitting at the left hand. Kanye is not identifying himself as God in that video. What is it? If that's not him identifying himself as a God, what is? Now, everybody got the symbolism of the horn-headed angels. Everybody understood the satanic reference there. Everybody got that one. But did you all get the one sitting at his left hand? Or should I say the left hand of the Father?
I didn't get that.
Most people didn't. And that was why I thought the video was brilliant, because I'm like, this is symbology that is so that you have to go look off of so deep into that most people will miss it. But I guarantee you that a lot of white folk, especially your Christian theologians, didn't miss that at all. This man is making it very clear to us what he is identifying himself as. He's standing right there at the seat of power. He's standing with pillars. He's standing in between the set of pillars. What are you saying, that you're the central pillar? We all know what a central pillar is. A central pillar is that which holds up everything. Take a look right above Kanye. You can see what could be identified as the Shekinah. I'm not even going to tell you all what the Shekinah is. Go look up Shekinah for yourselves. There's a reason why Kanye had that in that video. He's not making any bones about it. I guess another word for Shekinah could be third eye, if you all really think about it. And I don't want you all to get distracted on New World Order stuff and Illuminati stuff. That's not the point. Of course, Kanye was making a play at that because people were saying so much about it. But my real point is, did you get the symbolism of that song? I'm living in the 21st century, doing something mean to it. Do it better than anybody you ever seen do it. I mean, he's at this point doing Cassius Clay. He's letting you know I'm on top, and I'm letting you know it. And next thing you know, they went after him. Because if other blacks actually understand what you're saying, you're setting a dangerous precedent. We spent the last 20 years getting these dumb niggas chasing hoes and clothes, and here you're telling them that it's all about power. It's all about power. No, we got to stop you. We are going to go on a jihad against you. We're going to make you into a damn joke. Because that's the only way we can stop you at this point. See, he was like Neo from the Matrix. One of them went rogue. We built up one, but he went rogue. But TBA, he only did it once. Once is enough when you really think about it, huh? Actually, I shouldn't say once is enough. Once is not enough to make change, but one time is one time too many. We're not going to sit up here and support you like we used to, because you've shown us that you'll turn against us. One time is one time too many. You've tried to buck the system one time too many. Time for us to stop you. Time for us to put a stop to you. Ariel, I want you to do yourself a favor tonight, okay? Do yourself a favor. Do yourself a favor and make yourself a promise that you're not going to listen to any more music that does not say anything to you. Divorce yourself from this idea that your music must be useless and empty and worthless. Separate yourself from that. If you are going to be a musician, fall in love with music, Ariel. Have you ever written a song of your own?
Once for class, but no, not by my,
that
not for any other reason.
That is a sin, Ariel. That's a sin. That's a sin. You are never mm-hmm. supposed to do that. A musician is supposed to be able to write their own songs. If you're not writing your own songs, that means that the music has not taken root with you. The music hasn't taken root.
Oh, I didn't want to be a musician. I just took band, that's all.
Well, what I'm saying is that do you understand that you don't even identify music anymore? You took a music class, and now at this point you're totally divorced from music.
Oh, no, I'm still in band. I just don't listen to the right things.
Well, what are we going to do about it?
Stop listening to that type of music.
Well, I'm just going to say
to
you, hey, you can keep listening to anything you want to. What I'm saying is that what you consume into your thoughts and your mind, that Jesus was right. It's more dangerous than anything you'll ever put in your mouth. Even if you put bad food in your mouth and get food poisoning, at least you'll vomit that up. When you take garbage into your mind, that stays and becomes a part of your soul. And you may never make your way back from that. You're going to spend a lot of time listening to music. Listen to music that actually says something to you. Reject anything that does not actually say something to you. Reject any music that does not actually talk about your life. Ariel, the great sin of dubstep and modern rap music as put out by the white corporations, the great sin of modern R&B as put out by the white corporations is that it does not say anything to us about our lives. My life ain't a dance club. Okay, it's very nice to hear about clubbing and drinking and clubbing, but what if my life ain't no party? Then what? You ain't put out a single song that says anything to me about my life. Just a bunch of garbage about clubs. Do you all remember the song that they gave Eminem, I think it was an Oscar for, or what was it? Or at least that they nominated for an Oscar? You all remember that one?
For Grammy? Oh.
There were two songs, I think they were from the 8 Mile soundtrack. I don't know because I ain't really heard them like that. But there were two songs. There was one that they sampled with Aerosmith. And then there was another song, Lose Yourself.
Mm-hmm. I remember that one.
If you actually listen to Lose Yourself, because I've heard the end of the song, I was like, now, this ain't what he talks about when he gets on songs with black folk. He talks about a young man who is trying to overcome his circumstances. But this isn't what he talks about when he's with 50 Cent and Kanye and everybody else. He talks about a bunch of bull crap with them. But when he goes and talks to his people, he talks about overcoming your circumstances and not talking about money and hoes overcoming it either.
Jason, he talks about keeping his family together and fighting for your family. And he does do that, exactly what you just said. That's exactly what he does.
He encourages y'all to coon and talk about nothing. He encourages all of y'all to coon and talk about nothing at all. But when it's time for him to do something, he talks to his people about something substantive. He doesn't talk to his people about garbage. He talks to his people about something meaningful. Something that speaks to you about your life. That's what he talks to his people about. That's why, Ariel, don't you ever take in another song that does not say something to you about yourself. Because they are giving that to you because they don't want you to have nothing else. They love fad music like that because it destroys your concept of music altogether. Music executives don't give a damn if they kill music around the world. They don't care. As long as you buy it. Long as you buy it, that's all they care about. I'm going to go ahead and bring in another caller here. Caller from 225, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First TVA.
What's your name? Where you calling from?
I'm sorry. This is Cody Laws from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
And what's on your mind, brother?
First and foremost, I think the next documentary that needs to come out is The Truth Behind Hip-Hop with Jason Black. You are putting out some real deep stuff right now, and this is more in the realm of what I've been following and what I've been studying with. So you are, as usual, hitting the nail dead on the head, dead center, right into the wood, knocking it past the wood. Kind of getting back to the original, I guess you want to say, discussion that we were having about hip-hop being completely whitewashed. When I first saw that article, the first thing that came to my mind was Dr. Claude Anderson's a talk he had one time that I found a video of him speaking on YouTube, and it kept echoing in my head how black people only had a small window of time to get their act together before we became a permanent underclass citizen. And seeing that now black people who gave birth to hip-hop as we know it today are being pushed out slowly but surely out of our own creation is being taken from us and we're being pushed out of it, it's just echoing those words back to me, and it kind of echoes even more than ever how we need to take control of what it is we have. It's not just enough to just bring in something, you know, for the world to enjoy. We have to actually take control of this kind of stuff and make it our own and put a brand on it, you know, and not allow anybody to take it from us, to access, have free access to it, you know, without going through the proper channels, without us being the gatekeepers and without you having to come to us. And that's pretty much what my mind frame is right now. I kind of got lost into the whole last bit of the discussion you were having, especially with Kanye West and the symbolisms in that. I've just been following it with my mouth dropped open. Not because you were saying anything that I had not learned about already, but mainly because you were saying the things that I already knew. You know, things that I had already been studying in a root beer. I'm sorry about that. I was making an order. But as I was saying, the things that you were saying were so powerful because it was so right and it was so accurate and it was so dead on that it can't be refuted. It absolutely can't be refuted, whether you're a conspiracy theorist or whether you're just an average listener.
First of all, I don't want you to get in trouble because I know you're at work right now.
No, sir. Actually, I'm not. I was actually just pulling in through a little driveway to grab me a bite to eat. I've been working on my car all day.
Okay, because I recognize that beeping sound at the fast food restaurants when the car has been sitting there too long.
Yeah, that's my car that's sitting in the drive-thru, actually.
Okay. Well, you're from Baton Rouge, and how old are you?
I'm 30.
Okay, well, you're 7 years younger than me. Back in the early 90s, around 1991, there was a rapper from New Orleans, I believe it was. I think his name was Joe Black. And he had a song called Where You From. And I've been trying for years to find that thing. It's going to be kind of hard since it was just in Louisiana. And I'm in Shreveport, not so many people remember it. But he had a song called Where You From. And I remember that song because that was one of the last few rap songs. It's like 20 years ago, y'all. 20 years ago. One of the last songs that actually spoke to us as black people. As black
right.
men. Because he was talking about where you from and all these folks around talking about where you from and all that mess. And he has a line in the song where he says, all this where you from stuff got brother getting shot up with nothing to leave or pass on but a herringbone. And once you're dead and gone, life goes on. So it ain't no West Bank thing, ain't no West Bank thing, ain't no East Bank thing. It's a big bank thing. And I'm just trying to cash in and get me some because it's all about that income. And I'm like, this is why the major labels don't want you. The major
exactly.
labels ain't got nothing for you.
Exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Super Truck is right. As Joe Black said, it ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. Yeah, I don't know if there's a place to even get that song, but I'm glad to see that somebody validated that. I wasn't just making that up off the top of my head, but he's correct. That's Joe Black. It ain't where you're from, it's where you're at. And there's a reason why certain brothers couldn't get a record contract any bigger than that, because they weren't going to do like Tupac and just give everything up. They weren't going to do that. And when you make a song like that, man, you've let the establishment know. Oh, hell no. We're
not
going to give you
us.
Millions of dollars to sit up here and do that. And 15 years later, Hurricane Katrina.
Hurricane Katrina.
With a bunch of black folks sitting outside the Superdome screaming, we need help. We need help.
Holding up signs, screaming for help. And the biggest tragedy with that was the time to help one another came way before Katrina. The time for us to build something is now. Don't wait for the Katrina to make it to your door. Don't wait for Zimmerman to show up at your door and then you want to hold up the signs and scream for help. It's too late. Now somebody done cut on the lights and the roaches done scattered. Whatever roaches left out there in the middle of the kitchen, that's the one getting stepped on. That's just the way it goes. And we are so close. We are so dangerously close to being stumped out. White supremacy is stumping us out one at a time, taking everything that could be considered a resource for us to utilize. And it's not even like they're just coming in and forcefully taking it. We're giving it to them with a big old smile on our face. Here you go. Did I do good, sir? Did I do good? Please tell me I did good. I get a pat on the head? Okay, well, I'll see if I can get on creating something new so you can go ahead and take that too. Whatever you say, sir, whatever you say.
And I just, like I say, I know it's been a couple of decades now, and it's a situation where what we talk about now is so much different from what it was before, and a lot of it is the fact that we have given up our cultural legacy. What they did was they promoted a bunch of coons and goons, your T-Pains and T-Is, who make a bunch of garbage that is generic. So they steered rap from being Afrocentric to being generic, and now anybody can do it, including some yuppie-ass white girl from Australia. A yuppie-ass white girl from Australia is trying to do our music? Don't you know that T.I. is an agent now? Don't you know T-Pain is an agent? Don't you know that all these folks, Dr. Dre, don't you know they're all agents now? They are all agents of white supremacy. Their job was to make our music generic so that they could say that, see, this isn't black music. This is just rap or hip-hop or R&B music. And here comes Justin Timberlake. Here Comes Robin Thicke. They just the white person and surround them with enough coons and bed wenches until they test your racial identity. And what they found is that black people are willing to give up their racial identity, A, if a white person walks in the room, B, if enough black people appear to have done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two criterion. If a white person walks in the room, they'll give it up. And if you found a black person who won't give it up, just send in enough black people who are saying that this is okay. Then they'll give it up. And that's why what I found to say here is very, should be very elementary, but to most black folk it's rocket science.
Now, you talked about T.I. and T-Pain being agents. Now, the funny thing about being an agent is once your time is served, you are replaced. You are replaced, and you can be replaced with anybody. And depending on how far along you got, most agents, most secret agents or whatnot, they never make it out the field at all. But the point being that once we've turned you into an agent, once we've got you to do what we want you to do, you have a time limit on you. All we got to do is turn that hourglass over, and we're going to let you get in there, infiltrate your own culture, get it to where it's a hospitable situation for us to come in, and now here's your discharge papers. You are no longer needed. Your services are no longer needed. Here's your discharge papers.
Well, I got a question for everybody who questions what you just said, anybody who wants to doubt it. Can you all show me anybody from the pre-Eminem era who is still making number one song today?
And Boom Goes the Dynamite.
Every time Eminem makes an album, here comes the white media to cover every square inch of it to make sure that everybody on earth knows. How many rappers from the pre-Eminem era are still making number one albums today? Very simple question. How many of the folk before him? Now, if Eminem wasn't meant to be your replacement, why is it that everybody before him can't get a leg in, but the media keeps coming to help him every time he shows up? Even, what is it now, 10, 12 years later? And they are still at Eminem's beck and call going on 15 years later. They are not doing that for any of the others. Why is it that you're not doing that? You're not doing that because he is meant to be your replacement, and they are trying to find the next one so that he can just pass the torch to the next white guy. So they're going to keep him afloat, even artificially, until the next white guy shows up.
And just to add on to that, the song that he's got playing on the radio right now isn't even that good. I've heard it a couple times. It's supposed to be an apology to his mom and kind of explaining the life she had. Now, if anybody remembers Eminem's career, the majority of the beginning of his career was dogging his mom. I mean, he was talking about everything from hitting over the head with shovels to all kinds of mess. And he has gone from that Eminem to the Eminem that we see today, where he's apologetic, he understands, and I love you, mom, and all this other stuff, and he still gets coverage, whether the song is good or whether it completely stinks. He's got coverage from head to toe, just as TDA just said, from head to toe. The white media will not allow him to become irrelevant. Will not allow it. For every new black rapper that comes out, they want to make sure you know, okay, you got this new guy out, but he's just kind of a fad. This ASAP Rocky, he's here right now, but he ain't going to be here too long. But we've got Justin Timberlake for you. He's still going strong. We got Eminem for you. He's still going strong.
Now, some folk tried to say Jay-Z. Okay, I will give you Jay-Z, but number one is Jay-Z. Number two, when you're it's not very hard to get a record company to push your album when you're an executive at the company. Is it very hard to get to figure that, you know what, they're going to heavily promote my album? Yeah, you're one of the executives. Of course. You're one of the guys who decides what albums get made and the budget for them. Of course it's going to be a hit.
Ah, you want to know the irony to that? Where are all the people who came up with Jay-Z? Whatever happened to Memphis Bleek?
Thank you very much.
Does anybody even remember Memphis Bleek?
Uh-huh.
Does anybody remember any of them? Bugsy Siegel or whatever his name is. Beanie Siegel? I mean,
Jazzo.
And true, I mean, there was... I've been some extenuating circumstances there, but I want to name off three names for you. Dre, P. Diddy, Jay-Z, the three guys all fighting to be on Forbes, who all sold their soul a long time ago. How many guys from Death Row are still relevant today? Okay, I'll go ahead and hand you Snoop. Anybody else? How many guys from Bad Boys, when P. Diddy started, are still out there and relevant today? And I submit to you that even if Biggie had lived, he'd be down there with what's his name, Black Rob and Craig Mack and the rest of them. See, them two names I just named them and gone so long that most of the young folk today don't even know who they are.
Only some of us
who are a little bit older remember those. P. Diddy came up because of them. How much of the Bad Boy roster that got him where he is, how many of them are still relevant today? Now, let's move on to Rockefeller. Who on Rockefeller is still relevant?
Besides the obvious Jay-Z.
Yeah.
You got to take him out of the equation.
If you remove Jay-Z from the equation, what does Rockefeller have?
Nobody.
If you remove P. Diddy from the equation, is there even still a Bad Boy Records anymore, by the way?
I don't know, but I'm
okay.
If we
got to strain that hard to get an answer, it ain't. If you got to think that hard, because if we sit here and say, does Aftermath have anybody, we all going to rattle off some names. But if we got to think that hard, obviously they ain't moving no weight.
Nope.
What about
and
Wayne?
We all know what happened to Death Row. But my point there is, that kind of sounds familiar, don't it? That kind of sounds like what white folks do with you. That we used all these black folk to make us a bunch of money, and when it's over, okay, we got to keep one of you, but we're only going to keep the one who is most subservient, will not buck the system, and is not going to lift a damn finger to help the rest of you.
Exactly. Which is why you only got four guys fighting for to get on the Forbes list.
What about Lil Wayne?
What about
him? Is he as far as your before Eminem?
Yeah, reading the chat room too much, Gwen. That's the danger of doing that.
I'm not in the chat room at all.
Stop. What was Lil? No, you didn't just come off the top of your head. Don't lie to me. Anyway.
No, Jason, I'm not in the chat room.
I'm not going to have anybody on my phone line. In any case, what was Wayne's?
I grew up with Hot Boys.
What was Lil Wayne's? You grew up with the Hot Boys.
Yeah.
Ain't you from Maryland?
No, I'm not from Maryland. I mean, everybody listen to Hot Boys.
I grew up with the Hot Boys.
No, I'm a brat, you know, but I mean.
I'm from North Carolina.
No, I grew up with Hot Boys. I mean, Wayne, as far as before, you know, Eminem, a little bit before.
I remember him. I did not say who made an album before Eminem. I didn't say that. Who had a hit before Eminem, before the Eminem era began? Who had a hit before the Eminem era is still relevant today? Because hits come and go. That's why they call them one-hit wonders. Who's a rapper who had a hit before the Eminem era, who was major before the Eminem era? Because Wayne was not major before the Eminem era.
No, he was not.
Wayne was a major figure until Lollipop. Wayne was not a major figure until Lollipop. Get out of here. You can get thrown all you want to. You got indigestion. Wayne was not a major figure until Lollipop. So
that
you can
was,
say
was part of the original Hot Boys, but he was not a big figure. He was not a big hit wonder. He wasn't a big time rapper. He did the backup on back that thing up for Juvenile's song. He did the last backup part of that song. You know, he wasn't a big deal.
Because they were pushing Juvenile.
He started putting out a couple mixtapes somewhere around the Eminem area, but he didn't really get to be a big figure really until Lollipop.
He wasn't a figure at all, let's just be honest. I mean, he wasn't really a figure at all. He was like 16 when they started, and most of the Cash Money roster had left for various reasons. It was supposed to be Juvenile and BG. And BG gave us the term bling, by the way. White folks saying it now. BG gave that to us. So Juvie and BG were the big figures. Wayne was supposed to come up later. But after Juvie and BG left, that was pretty much all that Birdman had left. But Birdman showed he knew how to make a hit out of Wayne. But until Lollipop, Wayne wasn't nothing. So let's just be honest about it. No, he wasn't. So, no, the answer is...
He had a few cool songs, but he wasn't big.
Other than Snoop Dogg, the answer is other than Snoop Dogg, nobody.
Mm-hmm.
That's the answer. Other than Snoop Dogg, nobody. And my point is that Eminem has been kept artificially resuscitated by the white corporate media because he's the only white guy they got. And they are not going to lose him. They tried Paul Wall. Y'all remember that?
TBA, I got another one for you. Anybody remember Bubba Sparks?
Mm-hmm.
Tried him.
Yep. They tried him. They tried Bubba Sparks. They tried, who was that other one? There was another one. It wasn't just Paul Wall. It wasn't just Bubba Sparks. There was another one that came and went real quick. I forget off the top of my head, but there was another one. He came and went real quick. They've been trying, and they just kept trying, and they have not been able to get anybody young. What they want is a white Kendrick Lamar, and he ain't
gosh.
They want a white Kendrick Lamar, somebody really young that they can pass it on to and get the next generation of white girls and white boys. But they don't have it.
Well, if that's the case, then maybe they might be eyeballing Mac Miller.
Macklemore.
Not Mac Lamar, Mac Miller.
Well, I said Macklemore though.
Okay, well.
Him too.
They trying to do something with him
Macklemore
too.
They're
pushing him hard.
They're pushing Macklemore, and they don't give a damn if you like Macklemore or not. They are pushing him down your throat. Don't matter if you're straight. Don't matter if you're black. You will have no say in the matter of Macklemore. We don't care if you like him or not. We are going to have an heir to Eminem. Who cares if he's gay and that will mean nothing to females? Who cares? He's the only horse running right now. And what they're showing you is that they have pulled out all the stops. Rationality don't matter. And this is why we as black people are supposed to be laughing and lampooning that stuff every time we see it. And black folk are not doing it because for black people, it's more important to them as a group. Black folk consider it to be more important to get people to get acceptance by white people, that that's more of a treat than anything else.
So Macklemore is hip hop?
If they have to say, if they have any say about it.
If they have any say so about it, I suppose.
I mean, not by what
we originally defined it as hip hop. No, he is not. Not even close.
But neither is Iggy Azalea. But the point is, they listen to me. They are record executives. They don't give a damn what you call the music. They don't give a damn. You have to understand, the record executives are what? Old white guys. That's not their culture that they're whoring out and destroying. They don't care. They don't give a damn about killing rap music. That would be a plus to them because it would consolidate the genres. The biggest problem with rap music was that it opened up the doors for black men to become entrepreneurs in the music business on their own. They would like nothing more than to kill rap music. Ever since Eazy-E made, what was that, $150,000, $200,000 out the trunk of his car, they have been on a nonstop campaign to destroy that type of revenue. Black men who can make money out the trunk of a car. Make big money out the trunk of a car. Hell no.
Can't have that.
Take that damn stuff over. Give people an easy way to get it and then trash the hell out of it. And for those of you who think that's too complex and too complicated, you don't know warfare. You see, some wars can be won short term. Other wars have to be won over the long term. And they have gone on a long-term jihad to destroy rap music and black men's ability to make it. So they don't give a damn about trash hip-hop, about trash rap. That's black music. And these are white male executives. They don't give a damn about destroying our culture. They could care less. They see themselves as the modern incarnation of the conquistadors and the British settlers, that they are here to rape and destroy other cultures.
It just so happened with this particular culture, the way that they effectively are destroying it by sending those contaminated blankets in and getting the culture sick from within and allowing it to die from within.
Yeah, but this is a case where they opened up a store that said we're having a sale on contaminated blankets. And black said, yeah, you got clean blankets? Yeah, I don't want none of them. Give me some contaminated ones. We are the first customers who asked for the contaminated blankets.
You know, and I also feel like they're trying to do a lot because as a woman, I think maybe at least I saw an article a few months ago that was talking about hip-hop, and then they were, you know, talking about who's hot and who's not and stuff like that. And, you know, they were going on and on about Eminem, and they were describing him as, you know, sexy and blue eyes, and just they were saying certain things about him. And then they compared him to Jay-Z. And, you know, they started clowning on Beyonce being married to Jay-Z. And, you know, even though he has a beautiful wife, you know, we didn't picture him getting married to Beyonce, but he does have a beautiful wife. And then there's just little things, little seeds they plant, I think. And just to kind of turn you off from black people as a whole and then black men, you know, push blue eyes and whatever color hair he has.
You cannot be sexy if you're black.
And that's the whole point.
Now, see, now, and you'll bear me witness on this, brother, when I say this. There are terms that you will never hear the white media, the white gossip magazines, the white glamour magazines and websites. There are terms you will never hear them subscribe to a black man. Terms like hunk. Have you ever heard them refer to a black man repeatedly as a hunk? I don't care how ripped and muscular he was.
Nope.
Have you ever heard them refer to a black man as hot in a sexual sense? A young black man.
No.
Absolutely not.
Now, when was the last time you heard the white media, the white gossip magazines, refer to a black woman as sexy? They refer to Beyonce as pretty. Have you ever heard them refer to her like they do Madonna as sexy? Thank you. How about even Halle Berry? Have you ever heard them refer to her as sexy?
How can
all these high-profile black women, Serena Williams, Beyonce, we can just go down the list, Nicki Minaj, Halle Berry, keep going, whoever you want to name.
Gabrielle Union.
If you are a black woman, they automatically exclude you from consideration of sex.
You never
get referred to that way. How is it that I can be doing the same things as white women, in the same movies as white women, and yet you don't call me the same thing?
And if they do, it's like animalistic. I noticed that they like to tie animal kind of strengths. Like with black men, they like to play on a, you know, it's very subtle, you know. So examples aren't falling off my top of my head. But, you know, when they talk about Beyonce, they like to do things like talk about a cat or compare her to a cat or, you know, feline kind of animal kind of
thing.
Well,
it's what it is it's reinforcing that stereotype that strong, independent, don't need a man for nothing type mentality.
Mm-hmm.
See, they subscribe that mentality to black women, whereas the white women get sexy and gorgeous and hot and smoking. They get those terms, but our women get the strong, emasculating men, something on the neck of their men, you know? Those are the kind of terms that's offered to
Well, they talk
women.
About black women from a character standpoint, but not a physical one.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Character traits
mm-hmm.
can be
exactly.
anybody. Anybody can have character traits. Physical traits are different.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not going to look at your dark skin and your brown eyes and your black hair and subscribe sexual trait to that, to compete with their woman. No, it's not a coincidence.
And they also try to play other women. They also try to play and confuse us with the J-Lo's and the Kim Kardashians and play them kind of against black women sometimes, even though I don't know that white people really accept them, but they try to have some kind of confusion games going in there, you know, like appreciating J-Lo for things that, you know, weren't appreciated before, you know, as well as Kardashian. It's kind of a confusion thing, I think, that I see going on. I've been at times confused by what is supposed to be acceptable.
J-Lo can almost pass for one of them. So they're going to give her the high praise. They're going to give her the high praise. We gave her a stamp of approval. She hung around with black folks just long enough to get that stamp of approval and jump ship the first chance she had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One minute you saw her, she was dancing on in Living Color. The next thing you know, she was Jenny from the Block, and you looking around like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah. Definitely.
But that goes back to something that was said a while back. This is a competition. This is a competition. And this competition is played and won by power, wealth, and influence. And because they have the power, wealth, and influence in the media, they are going to promote their women over our women. And that's just the way it's going to go. That's why any news article you look up, speaking of any actress or any pop singer or R&B singer or anything like that, the white women who are in that genre, they're going to always get, as TBA said, they're always going to get those terms of sexy. They're going to be seen as sexy and beautiful and blue eyes and blonde hair, and that's extremely sexy and gorgeous and hot and smoking, whereas your black women, your Gabriel Unions, your Halle Berrys, your Serena Williams, they might get cute, they might get pretty,
something,
but mostly
yeah.
They're going to get strong.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get independent.
Powerful, yeah.
They're going to get the character praise.
Do you all think
the character
that
trait praise?
Can those men, can men and women, can artists, can they choose, how much control do they have over their music videos or what they show?
None.
Little to none.
Really?
Those videos
wow.
are paid for by the record company. The guys like Gil Green, he's white, who directs a bunch of Rick Ross's video and Jay-Z and a lot of these rappers, they are paid by the record company. And they will put the models and everything in those things are approved by Gil Green and the directors of the videos, not by the rappers. Go take a look at the making of Rick Ross's All I Really Want. And you will see that Gil Green basically chose everything, including the auditioning of the girls. He did all that. Rick Ross was informed at the meeting, formed what kind of car it was going to be, what kind of suit, what kind of house, what kind of girls, which girl was going to be the main girl in the video. He was informed.
Wow.
He had no say. He was told what was going to be. And Gil told him how great it was going to be. But Rick didn't have any choice. They do not.
None.
You didn't pay for this.
Basically, it's like showing up for work. You show up, you get told what you're going to do, you put on your performance, and you leave, and that's it. The rappers have no creative control.
What? Why don't people know that, though? I mean, I can't say people didn't know that, but I always battled whether, like, can't these artists do something or can't they say something? But, I mean, why don't people... Why do we think rappers, or why do we think that the artists have total control? Is that on purpose? Because I didn't know that it went that deep. That, you know, I thought it was kind of what the artists had a little bit more to do with who they wanted, or, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. Looking at a lot of the rappers that you got out right now, your Chief Keef, your ASAP Rockies, your Ace Hood. Do you really think them knuckleheads got enough creative control, creativity? Do you think they have enough creativity to put together the kind of videos you see them in? Do you think they can actually afford half the stuff that they're in the video with?
No, I don't.
Furthermore, did their single Bastard Baby make mammies teach them to be leaders or followers?
Yeah.
You are asking for leadership.
Right,
you're asking for leadership and initiative from males who were never taught either.
Wow. Yeah. That's absolutely correct. And yeah, you're not going to be happy waiting for that because it's not going to happen. Do we need to shut these artists down? I mean, what?
What we need to do is define what being black means, so we can't keep getting away with this on an intellectual level. That's what we need to do.
Jason, can I ask you, why do you think that Beyonce, you mentioned Beyonce, and the thing is with her, and you guys mentioned kind of the feminist aspect, and I definitely see that and get that, and I grew up on Beyonce, Destiny's Child, too, so I know I know every song. So when she's with Jay-Z, she is not any type of feminist or anything like that, and when she's even in thongs with Jay-Z, I don't know if you've noticed, but she is very subservient, or she's very she's not being the feminist person that maybe she was in Survivor or maybe other songs. So why I've always wondered about her. Why do you think that, or do you see that she plays a strong woman and does the single ladies thing and does all that, but then with Jay-Z, she's quiet and she's very subservient. She's very submissive to him. She's not that same woman with him. Is that because of the power he has, or is that because what she's saying is not really her in her music? Or do you see that?
Right now, at this stage of music, we cannot assume that anybody is writing their own stuff. Because from what we've seen, practically nobody is. And that includes rap, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Go look up, for example, just the credits for Power. Go take a look at how many credits there are on that thing. Beyonce is... I can't imagine a dull wit like that being able to write anything. She gets these songs are written for them by a bunch of other people and go out and perform them. In addition to everything else, it keeps you from having rights to the song. You've got, you know, you have performance rights, but not composition. Can't take a whole lot from you, but they're going to take from you what they can.
They're going to take from you what they can. And they're going to leave you with as little as possible.
What do you mean they have performance?
Sit around and let them rappers make you think they got millions of dollars. I'm joking, finish that video and jump up in a Honda Civic and go they tail home.
It's going to cut you all here in just a few minutes. It's going to cut y'all in a few minutes, so I'll let y'all go ahead and get in your last words here because Blog Talk is about to cut y'all in just a moment here. I just wanted to keep you as long as you could since the conversation was going so well, but I'll let you two go ahead and have the last word.
It's all about power, wealth, and influence. Own it. It's not enough to just have a job. It's not enough to just work somewhere. Own it. Own it. Whatever it is you're doing, master it and own it. And make it your own and define it. And that's all I got. Black first.
Gwen?
Yes, well, thank you, as always, for having me on. And I concur with what the brother just now just said. And black people, let's not be afraid anymore. Let's not be afraid to move ahead. And we're going to have to leave some people behind, maybe. So let's just get on the ball. Black first.
You don't have to be looking for trouble. Trouble has come looking for you now. It's going to be your decision whether you back down or double down. But the ability to run is no longer there. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future is uncompromising.